It's Abu here. You're probably wondering, what's different around here? And the answer is everything. I took the last year off, not just from podcasting, but from everything. I needed a reset. Last year was one of the hardest years of my life. And as you know, life doesn't just throw one thing at a time at you. It hits you with everything all at once. I hit a mental roadblock, my business hit a wall, and then I faced an unimaginable loss of someone I deeply loved. I had a reset. I went deep, asking myself, what's wrong with me? What did I do to deserve this? I struggled with grief, with loss, with relationships, with business, and family. I was operating from a place of seeking permission. Permission to let go, permission to step back, permission to prioritize myself. And then it hit me. You don't need anyone's approval to take the next step. You don't need permission to be a CEO. But you do need the tools, the mindset, and the support to lead in a way that doesn't cost you your peace. It took me over a decade to truly figure this out. And now, I'm ready to keep going, sharing what's worked, what hasn't, and everything I'm still learning along the way. So if you're ready, and I know I am, hit subscribe, leave a review, and share this with someone who needs to hear it. Because this isn't just my journey, it's ours. Lastly, I just want to thank everyone that reached out to me over the last year just to check on me, make sure I was doing good. I truly appreciate the support, and I look forward to continue building more deep connections with you all. This is the Powered AF Podcast, a show about visionaries, high performers, and entrepreneurs, and their stories on how they push past fear, overcome imposter syndrome, and navigate through the mental roadblocks in order to achieve the highest level of success. And I'm your host, Abu Fofana. In this week's episode, we're going to be interviewing a very special guest, Terry Lomax. Now, Terry is a student of mine in the Power Your Launch Marketing Accelerator. But the reason why I wanted to bring Terry on this podcast is because several weeks ago, she interviewed me on her own podcast, which is Cultivating Her Space podcast. And I had such an incredible time with her and her co-founder of that podcast. We talked about a lot of different topics. And I wanted to bring her on because Terry is someone that from our conversation, I just took a lot away from. And I knew she had a lot to say. And you'll hear a lot of what she has to say on this episode. But we talk about grief. We talk about loss. We talk about overcoming adversity. We talk about creating the environment around you, you know, in order to succeed and thrive. We talk about how she used to work for Asana. Yes, Asana, the project management tool. And I never knew this about her. And so in her story, in her journey, there have been many ups and downs. And what I love about Terry is her resilience. And you'll see and hear a lot of that in this episode of why you need resilience in order to be where you want to go and how you develop that resilience as well. Now, Terry's accomplished so many things, and you'll hear it. One of the things she most recently accomplished is her podcast has now been listened and downloaded over 2 million times. And so that's really, really, a great feat and something that I hope to accomplish one day as well. So let's dive into this week's episode with Terry Lomax. Terry Lomax and I go way back, I think this or last year, but I wanted to bring her on the podcast because I felt like she has a lot to say, a lot to offer as well. So welcome to the show, Terry.
Thank you so much, Abu. I'm so excited.
I feel like I'm talking to one of the podcasting goats out here, legends. Terry, I saw you just crossed over 2 million, by the way, 2 million downloads. Mm-hmm.
2 million downloads. It's insane, Abu. It's just growing rapidly. We're so excited.
When did you start the podcast?
So we started about 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
Yep. So January will be 3 years for us.
Wow. Yeah, y'all have to go check out the Her Space podcast. I wanted to give her a shout out because I recently saw that they had crossed over 2 million downloads and, you know, doing over 100 downloads a month. So that's amazing. Now, I want to stop talking and let Terry introduce herself. And so, Terry, for those listening in that are listening into you for the first time, In your own words, who are you and what do you do?
Yes. So I am a podcaster, speaker, and brand strategist, and I basically empower entrepreneurs to leverage social media and personal branding to grow their audience, their impact, and those bank accounts. And so right now I have a podcasting course where I basically simplify the podcast development process, and I help my students bring their podcasting goals to life. So you can visit podcastwithterry.com and register for my free masterclass there. And I also, Abu, I'm really excited. I have this 3-part pitching series at getthatpitch.com. And I basically teach people how to pitch themselves for interviews, how to collaborate with high profile guests. Abu, after we had you on the show, we actually had Yvonne Orji on, and we had a lot of other great guests as well. So I'd love to teach other people how to get that media coverage, because we know it boosts credibility and it also helps to expand your audience.
Right. And I think that's really important in the entrepreneur world. Like, that aspect is always missing. People don't know how to reach out or communicate or even convey their own message as well. And so as you are helping these entrepreneurs, are you doing that specifically through podcasting? Is that the medium in which you're helping them push their voice and make an impact and secure money, essentially?
Yes. So I do it through podcasting, but this new pitching workshop series that I have, it's really just going to be for anyone that has a message, a product, or anything to promote. And they're just trying to figure out, how do I get, you know, a high profile influencer on my podcast or in my, you know, in a collaboration, or how do I pitch sponsors and things of that nature? And also like getting media coverage and all that good stuff. So I'm going to give them my tips and tricks and all that good stuff. And I do want to say, if they visit getthatpitch.com and type in Abu, they can get 20% off.
Yes, the special link. Listen, royalty out here. Make sure you check out getthatpitch.com/Abu in order to check that out. And that is for anybody looking to leverage, you know, social presence, looking to pitch. So you don't have to just be wanting to start a podcast. You could actually be in any type of space. So make sure you check that out. Now, did you always know you wanted to be in this space? Did you start out in this space?
No, I didn't. So I actually, like, ever since a young age, I was like a very nerdy kid. I was always asking myself, like, why am I here? I was very into, like, what is my purpose in life? And, you know, reading books like The Purpose Driven Life when I was a kid. And the thing about it is, I had a really rough upbringing, right? I was raised in an abusive household. I'm from Philly too. I had to put that in there. From Philly, Southwest Philly in the house. And so I was raised in this abusive household. My mom was physically and verbally abusive. She was in and out of jail since I was 8 years old. And the thing for me, like, we getting real, right, Abu?
Right.
We getting real. I struggled a lot with, you know, low self-esteem, depression, anxiety, suicidal ideations. And for a long time, because of what I had experienced in my home, like, I did not like myself. And so that could have been why I was always asking myself, like, why am I here? Like, why did God put me on this earth to suffer, you know, as a child, to experience all these things? And so I was very much into figuring out, you know, what is the purpose for the pain, right? And so I always knew at a young age that I wanted to help people. Like, I knew that I had a story to share. I knew that I was like, okay, something, I hadn't been through all this stuff. Like, I had to help someone else in some kind of way. And so I always knew that sharing my story and helping people in some way was tied to my, like, destiny and purpose. But I didn't know how I was going to do that. So it took a while to kind of figure that out. And I think it still evolves over time. But that is really how I kind of fell into podcasting, because on our podcast, Cultivating Her Space, we talk about those taboo issues, you know, the things that many of us talk about with our friends, or we might think about within ourselves, but we may not, you know, go out and actually talk about on social media. So whether it's, you know, mommy issues, right? Daddy issues, growing up and being abused, imposter syndrome, narcissism, all those things.
So as a child going through all that, did you see entrepreneurship in the household, or where did that even come into your life where you thought that, okay, I need to become an entrepreneur? You know, where did that, that grit come from? And being as a child, everything's happening around you. Are there things that you had to unlearn as well along the path to becoming to where you are?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as far as the entrepreneurship side, I grew up in church. And so, you know, at church, they have like the fish fries and they have you know, different events like that. Like, I've always seen people, I've always seen entrepreneurs around me, right? I remember my mom and dad, although we had a lot of dysfunction in the household, there were a lot of lessons that I learned in the household. And I remember my mom and dad had like a cleaning business. My mom was also, she's like very talented. And so I remember her having this cleaner's business where she would like iron people's clothes and provide like a cleaning service. I remember being in Girl Scouts and I thought it was so cool how we sold these cookies and we got money. And I was like, okay, if I find something that people value, like cookies or whatever it might be, right? I know that I can create some income for myself. And it's funny, I remember being in like middle school and my sister and I, we wanted to go to the corner store to get pressed on nails. And so we asked my mom, like, can we go around and clean people's houses, you know, so we can get money to go buy the things that we want. So entrepreneurship was definitely very much around me in that upbringing. And then as far as unlearning, I've had to do a lot of unlearning because I think that, you know, many of us know, like, our minds are so powerful. And I realized that I had a lot of self-defeating, you know, thought processes. And I think, you know, when you are raised in the type of environment that I grew up in, it's very easy to live life like and be bitter, right? It's very easy for you to point the finger at, you know, mommy and daddy, they did this, or, you know, my grandparents did this, or whatever it might be. But I had to realize that it is possible for you to be the victim, the villain, and the victor, like all at the same time, right? Mm. And so I had to do my own work and realize that, yes, I was raised in this environment, but I can't walk around pointing the finger at what mommy did my whole life and excuse that for my toxicity, because I realized that I had some toxic stuff that had to be addressed as well. And so doing my work, that really did help me unlearn some of those things. And a lot of it was just the way I thought about myself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because what did that look like for you? Because I think a lot of people grow up in these environments where they can't escape the environment. So when you can't escape the environment, what does that look like for you? Like what can you do?
Yes, I'll give you the perfect example. Okay, so when I was in high school, we were living in Chester, Pennsylvania. You probably know where that is, Abu. We were living in Chester, Delaware County, and we were living in a one-bedroom shelter. My mom, my dad, my four younger siblings. And it's so crazy because I used to go to school with a smile on my face and nobody knew what we were going through because I was so embarrassed. And I remember in that space, like in that predicament, although it was so chaotic, although it was so depressing, I would go, one of the things my pastor used to say is, you can leave a place mentally and it'll feel as though you've done it physically. So I would like always put my headphones in. I would journal a lot. I would visualize. I literally have journal entries. Like I kept all those childhood journals. I have journal entries where I signed it as like future millionaire. I'm not there yet. I'm getting there, Abu. I'm getting on your level. But future best-selling author, right? I would speak those things into myself. And so I think that if you are in an environment that is not conducive to positivity and to growth and where you want to be, we have to move there in our minds, because where our mind goes, the body's going to follow anyway. And so literally a lot of the things that I wrote down in that journal, Abu, when we were homeless, when we were living in the shelter or living with friends and family, a lot of those things are coming to fruition. And the feeling to be on the other side, like it is so incredible. It is so incredible. Mm.
Now, as you were growing up, because I grew up in, you know, seven of us total, but I was raised by a single parent. And a lot of the things I was experiencing, although people thought I didn't realize what was going on, I took a lot of those things in and I internalized it. And I used it as fuel to sort of motivate me to wanting a better life for my family and my mom. And, you know, I read that, you know, you lived in 14 residencies, right? Including a hotel and a shelter, 4 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, 3 high schools. You know, what do you think that did to you? And how was your relationship with your parents and your siblings as all these, you know, transitions were happening?
Yes. So I will say, well, the thing about it is kids were so resilient, right? Like as a child, you don't really know. Like I didn't know how dysfunctional that was until now as an adult. When I was writing my book, I was like, I just kind of went back and I was talking to my sister and I was like, wait, I can't imagine being who I am right now and moving around 14 times or doing that to my child. I'm like, that's chaotic. That's not normal. And I think a lot of times too, when we grow up in dysfunction, it becomes familiar to you. So it becomes a norm. So for me, what that did for me, Abu, it allowed me to love adventure. So I really can't necessarily say that I'd have to think really hard about any of the negative things that moving around a lot did, but it allowed me to be able to just move from, you know, Maryland right before I got married to Silicon Valley and make a way for myself, build community here, meet new people, because I always had to do that growing up. And so it definitely made me feel as though I can live anywhere. Like I traveled abroad and I didn't speak the language in the cities I was in. And I was like, okay, cool. I got this. Like I've moved around a lot. I can do it. So I think it definitely opened my mind up to the possibilities of what's, you know, what can happen as far as where we go in life and the connections we make. There was another part of that question. Oh, you said how my relationship was with my parents and my siblings. my siblings, they were really like my babies. Like, I really raised them. And even to this day, like, we still have that kind of relationship.
Are you the oldest?
Call me when stuff goes down. So I'm the second oldest. Okay. And yeah, I'm the second oldest. And the younger ones, some of them are still teenagers. They're like, you know, figuring out their life. And so I'm definitely still like that kind of mother figure to them. My parents, so my bonus dad, he actually passed away when I was 17, a month before I went away to college. We were on a family vacation and he passed away. Thank you, Abu. He passed away in our hotel room in front of my mom and siblings. And so that was very devastating for us, but we had a very good relationship. He was the prominent male figure in my life. And then my mom and I, we have had a very tumultuous relationship. We've had some really great times. Currently, we are estranged. And I actually, part of my healing process was talking about that on the podcast on, you know, how to become a mother, especially to a daughter when you're not in relationship with your own mother. But I will say it is best for me right now. And I really value protecting my peace, and mental health is really important to me. And so that is the best decision based on where I am today.
So how are you now fostering, you know, you had this childhood, you face adversity right out the gate, the gate, you faced a lot of adversity and you had to navigate that. So now that you're a mother, you know, raising and fostering this environment, how has that transition been being now on the other side?
Well, it has actually been, it's been beautiful overall. I think that I'm going to be honest. I mean, even though I feel as though it is best for me to protect my mental health, my daughter's mental health, and the peace in my life, not being in relationship with my mom, I think a lot of times we want to be, you know, in communication and in relationship with our parents, despite what they may have done. Like, they're your parents. And so I think sometimes there's this longing. And sometimes people also say things like, oh, well, that's your mom. Well, that's your dad. But I learned in therapy. I remember my therapist was like, okay, I have a question for you. If blank wasn't, you know, this person, or they didn't have this title, would you still be in relationship with them? And I was like, hell no, I sure would not. Like, no, if this person was, you know, showing up in this way and they were abusive and they were doing these things, I would not be in relationship with them if they didn't have a title. And so that's one thing I've had to do, is like really set hard boundaries on who I allow into my life, because my peace is so important. And as far as motherhood, it is so beautiful. I'd be like, I absolutely adore my daughter. I did so much personal work when I was pregnant, and even when I was in the process of trying to, you know, conceive, I did so much work to heal so that I would not continue those generational cycles. And so my daughter, I mean, we already have a great relationship, even though she's 7 months. Like, it's awesome. And yeah, it's awesome.
And I'm glad you talked about that, because there are people that are in our environment, in our life, that if we asked ourselves that question, your therapist asked you, we would have the same conclusion. No, these people should not be in our lives. But because we've given them this title, we have this attachment. And, you know, we could, you know, dig deeper into that as well, like why we're keeping these individuals around. Now, as you experience all this adversity, childhood, you're learning a lot now as your mother, you could reflect, right? Like 2020 hindsight, you could reflect on the areas that you had to grow in, the areas that you had challenges in. Now, when you said you grew up in Philly, and when did you make that transition over to San Diego or to the West Coast?
Yeah. So actually I was born in Philly. We moved to San Diego when I was about 2, and okay, we stayed there until I was about 12 years old. And then we moved back to Philly after that.
How was that? Yeah. 'Cause San Diego and Philly are, they're different.
Yo, it was a culture shock. So y'all, growing up in San Diego, right? It's funny. I remember making phone calls back home, talking to my cousins, my grandparents, and they would say, you know, that ignorant thing that people say, y'all would like, you sound like a white person, stuff like that. They would be like, I did talk like a Valley girl. Like, that's because that was what I was around. So I was like, oh my God, like that's the way that I spoke. Right. And so when I moved to Philly in middle school, you already know, Abu, you can only imagine, public school, all black kids. This is the most black people I've ever been around. They lit me and my sister up. Okay. We had the funniest looking clothes. We were not the cool kids at all. We got teased. I remember trying to like work on my accent and like try to sound like I was from Philly. So now I have like a Cali Philly accent now. That's what I have in adulthood. But yeah, I definitely tried to change, you know, the way I spoke. And I didn't feel very I guess included. Like, I didn't feel like, even though the people that I was there with, like, they looked like me, because I'm like, oh, we all black. But like, I just did not feel like I fit in at all. And I believe that caused me to just developed this personal relationship with myself, where I learned to walk alone, because oftentimes I had to, because I didn't really relate to a lot of people around me. So it was definitely a culture shock. It was mind boggling. So I'm like, wait, you black, I'm black, but wait, we don't. Okay, no, it wasn't clicking.
Have you always felt that feeling of being alone? Do you feel like you're still alone, right? Because you grew up and you had this childhood where, you know, you had to sort of deal with all this adversity. Do you still have that feeling of, I feel alone in this process, in this journey that I'm going through, and there's no one that understands me? Where are you at now with that?
I wouldn't say that I feel alone now, but I will say I've always been a weirdo. And I wasn't very comfortable with that in the beginning. Like, I've always been quirky. I've always been into computers. I always loved things that just weren't, I don't know, that everyone else around me didn't really enjoy. And so I've definitely always been a nerd and a weirdo. And I embrace it. I think being a weirdo is great. But today, I've definitely worked on cultivating a community of people that are like me, that understand me. My husband's also, like, he's a little weird, too. And he likes to nerd out and stuff. So that helps. And just the friends that I have as well. So I would say today, like these days, I don't feel alone these days because of the intentionality I've had with building what I call my chosen family. Sometimes if our family, they're not on board and they're kind of stuck in their ways and they're not trying to grow and evolve and, you know, be their best self so they can show up in a better way. I think having a chosen family that consists of like friends and mentors and advisors and stuff like
that. What's that mean? Chosen family. What's that mean?
You choose them. Like, you choose them and you're like, okay, I vibe with this person energetically or spiritually. So you part of my family now. Like, we're family. And I have one of my friends, Jasmine, it's funny. We met online like last year and we're so close. Like, we're just so tight and we just vibe. We're on that same energy level. And our family, we can't choose them. And a lot of people think because you're blood, you got to stick with these people. You got to hang out with them. No, like, if they're not on the same wavelength and it's not a mutually beneficial relationship, and it's not positive and it's not, you know, cultivating what you want to bring about in life, then you can lean into your chosen family, the people that you choose based on their energy and where they are and where they're trying to go.
No, I love that. I need to re-choose my family. I'm sure a lot of people and, you know, should consider that, because it is important, you know, and sometimes they aren't the best people, maybe during the journey that you're currently going through as well. And so I like that. I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to have to send people an invite. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly.
And so as you are, because it seems like what you started doing was you started cultivating the environment first mentally. You said, you know what, if I can't get away from this environment, I'm going to mentally go there. And then when you had the ability, you started cultivating by the people that were around you as well. Yep. And so as you were, you know, going through and, you know, you go back to Philly, what did you want to be when you went back to Philly? Did you always know you wanted to do entrepreneurship, or what did you want to be at that time? Do you remember?
So I wanted to be a lot of different things. I thought I wanted to be like a fashion designer. I thought I wanted to be in psychology, but then I let people discourage me with psychology when I went to college. And they were like, oh, you don't make no money. You got to get a PhD. And I was like, I'm not trying to go to school for that long. So I was like, all right, let me do business. So I did business marketing. I went to Kutztown University in Pennsylvania. And so for me, the thing is, though, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was in high school by Robert Kiyosaki. And when he talked about creating your own money, I was like, oh, that's appealing to me. Like, that was really, really interesting. And so that's what really captivated my attention as a teenager, is this concept of creating money out of thin air. And so I was on this kind of, you know, journey of like, how do I create money? I was on that for a while. And so I think that's what really sparked that in me, is the experiences I had as a Girl Scout and church and reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
What was your first job, you know, out of Kutztown? Like, did you automatically become an entrepreneur, or what was that first job for you?
Yeah, so the first job, you know what? After Kutztown, I actually went and got my master's right away. So I went to school for 4 years and I got a grad assistantship. And so, because I was like, okay, they're going to pay for my grad school and my housing? Bet. All right, cool. So I did that in Maryland at Salisbury University. And while I was there, that's when I started my blog. And that was like the first big, this was 10 years ago, which is so crazy to think about. But that's when I first started like my big, I want to say I made my big debut as like a brand builder and a business owner. I started the blog. And for me, the blog Mocha Girls Pit Stop was a place where I could really share my story and start doing some of the healing. Because what happened was, Abu, I graduated from college. I was a commencement speaker and people were so proud of me and they were like, oh my gosh, like you made it. And I was like, well, not yet. I got a bunch of goals I want to accomplish. So I went to grad school and I remember being in my apartment. I had my own place. I had this meal plan. They were paying for my grad school. They were paying for my place. And I remember sitting in my apartment. I had my own car. I was independent on my own. And I was like, I didn't did everything they told me to do. I went to school. I got good grades. I got a good job. I'm here. And I feel empty. Can we cuss of them?
Or not? Yeah. Yeah, you can.
I was like, I feel empty as fuck. Like, I feel empty. Like, I was like, this is what I waited all this time for. Like, I got to this place and I was just like, oh, this is crazy. Like, it was a mind fuck, because it was like people said all this time, like, yeah, you're supposed to do this and you do that and you go to school, get good grades, get a good job. And then boom, you make it. And I was like, well, I'm not happy. And so that's when I started to really dive in deep. I went to therapy for the first time after all that stuff I've been through. In my 20s, it was the first time.
That was your first time. Wow.
Formal. I'm going to say formal therapy, because I would say my best friend was like my therapist growing up. And journaling was therapeutic and like church was cool. But like the first official, like on the couch in grad school. So I was there in grad school. And that's when I started to realize, like, oh, you went through all this stuff and you suppressed a lot of stuff and you just kept it pushing. But now I was like, it was just me and me. Like when I lived by myself, right? Because I was living with other people, my roommates and stuff before that. It was the first time in life that I just had a chance to face myself. And it was hard. It was very, very hard. And so that's when I realized, oh, all that stuff I went through in childhood, it didn't just disappear. Like, it's still there. That's why I'm so self-conscious and so insecure. And that's why I feel, you know, I have this internal dialogue that isn't positive. It's because of what I went through. So that's when I began to peel back the layers and realize that what I went through as a child, it was very much present. And so the blog for me was a way for me to heal and also invite other women on the journey to heal with me. And so that was just an amazing journey. That was my first time really making money online, because I did, you know, webinars and did virtual trainings. I started motivational speaking at that time as well. And so, yeah, that was the first, I want to say, job I had out of college.
Why do you feel like it was so hard for you to first open up? And then when you did, you decided to make it public, right? You decided to do it through blogging. You know, why'd you decide that medium as you were trying to heal? You said, you know what, let me blog about this so everyone else could read it as well.
You know what? That's a great question. So when I was in the moment, I remember looking back. This is before, y'all have to think, this is before the Red Table Talks, the people being so transparent on social media. And what I realized at that time, I was like, people will give me compliments and say things about me and my life and where I am on the outside and what it looks like. But I was like, on the inside, I am in turmoil. Like I remember being so scared when I was in grad school to like raise my hand in class, because I still had that same mentality of when I was younger and not being accepted and not being included and being teased and being made fun of. And I remember walking around campus and I would just, I don't know if this sounds bizarre to you, Abu, but I remember thinking to myself, like, I don't even know how to be myself. Like I remember walking around and I was like, what do I think when I'm walking around? And that makes me emotional thinking about that. But I was just like, how do I be myself? Because for so long, I had to be a chameleon and I had to like shapeshift and become who was around me to be accepted.
Right.
I had not expected to get emotional. And so I had to really think to myself, like, where are other people that look like me that are going through the same things? So I felt like everyone else on social media at the time was like, oh, my life's amazing. And oh, it's great. I love myself. And here are my pretty pictures. And I was like, well, my shit ain't looking pretty, y'all. Like, I'm going through it over here. I'm struggling. And so that's why I decided to make it public. Because I was like, yo, there has to be other people in the world that are feeling the way that I'm feeling. Like, I cannot be the only person that looks like me that's going through this. And so I created that space. And then women came from out of the woodworks from across the globe. That were like, oh my gosh, I have issues with my mom too. I was abused too. I was touched when I was younger, like all the things, right? And then I realized, okay, this is for a purpose. Like, it's not just me that's going through this. We're in this together. And it really did. It was like therapy for my soul to be able to share in that public forum. And it was hard though, because family members had a problem with it. Because I grew up in a household where what happens in this house stays in this house. We don't talk about family business. We just pretend it didn't happen. But keeping those secrets wasn't serving me. So I had to share.
Wow. Wow. And thank you for sharing that, because it does take a lot to come to that realization of even putting yourself out there, because you know you could get hurt. You know people could say things about you. So thank you for sharing that. Would you say that was the first time you felt like you were finding your purpose? when women were emailing you and reaching out to you and saying, oh my God, like there's someone out here that is having the same experience that I'm having. You know, how did that make you feel? And did you feel like, okay, maybe this is my calling, is to share these experiences, to cultivate communities?
Yeah, I will say that it definitely did give me a bit of a vision on like, okay, this is where I can go. This is what I can do with my message. But I got it originally in church because my parents used to force me to go speak in front of the church. And the funny thing is too, like I used to get in trouble for writing notes in class and I was always trying to write somebody a note and you write notes to your friends in class and you pass it. Okay, I used to get in trouble for writing notes and talking too much. And those are the things that I get paid to do today, which is so cool because I think a lot of times the things that we got in trouble for as a kid or the things that we gravitated toward, a lot of times that's gives us a little foresight on what we are here for. And so I did learn that in church, but the blog for me, that's when I realized like, oh, wow, this is bigger than me. And this, I can really do something with this, like impact a lot of people. And so my mission has never changed, but the way in which I show up has evolved over time.
Now, at any point did you, as you were building these communities, did you feel like you had imposter syndrome? Like, you know, why is this happening for me? Or, you know, am I supposed to be having these discussions? Did you ever experience that when you were building, you know, these communities of people that are reaching out to you and almost positioning you as an expert in this space, right? Someone who they could relate to.
Yes. So imposter syndrome used to be my middle name. So yes, I absolutely struggle with that. And you know what's funny? So I remember when I first started the blog, right? I had blog posts out there, they were live. And what I did was I created the blog as part of my graduate school practicum. Cause I was like, okay, I don't think I'm going to be consistent with this. So I need to make sure I tie it to my grade. Cause I didn't play about my grades. So I was like, all right, I'm going to tie this to my grade to make sure that I am consistent. And I remember after I had the blog, again, I had blogs out there, but in my email signature, I had Terry Lomax, aspiring blogger and speaker and all these things. And when I think back to it, sometimes we add this aspiring to our name, like if we just started podcasts and we just started writing books, whole time we're doing the thing and we're robbing ourselves of really walking into what that could be because we got to put that little aspiring in there, right? Because of imposter syndrome. And so I realized that with myself and I started taking that off. I was like, no, I'm not aspiring. I got a blog. I'm a blogger. Like I'm doing this. And so a lot of times I think we really need to just walk in that power and not be afraid of what people say, what people think. If we're doing it, then we're doing it. And honestly, the way that we show up energetically, it's what we're going to manifest more of. And so, yes, I did struggle with imposter syndrome. I think even to this day, there are certain instances, certain situations that happen where I might have a little bit of that. But I think I have tools in my toolbox now, and I have so much, so many wins under my belt that I remind myself of those things. Like I have an accomplishments book. I also have different like journal entries that I can read through and testimonials.
What's an accomplishment book? Yeah. Hold on. Do I need one of those?
Okay. I mean, you might need one. It's funny. My husband's going to love hearing this interview because I'm shouting him out. He put me on to this when we were in grad school. So basically what it is it's a binder where you just put all your accomplishments. Like you put down the things that you've accomplished that you're proud of. And you know what's funny, y'all? When I first started my journey, one of my biggest accomplishments, you got to start somewhere, was registering my siblings for school. Right, because I was still a college student. I was doing like mommy stuff. I'm registering them for school, getting their, you know, records and things like that. So that was a big accomplishment. And making Christmas dinner. Like I made Christmas dinner, the whole, you know, spread, mac and cheese,
the mac and cheese.
I mean, it was good to the cornbread, all that. I made, and those were two of my biggest accomplishments back then. It's like making Christmas dinner and registering my siblings for school. So I think not sleeping on ourselves is a big thing. Realizing that every accomplishment matters no matter where we are in our journey. So today I have a lot more accomplishments and things that I've added to the accomplishments book, but it's a great reminder when you're feeling a little low and you need a reminder on like, wait, what have I done? Let me do a quick little assessment and see what have I done in this world, right? Because for me, legacy is just so important. And so being able to look back on the impact that I had is crucial.
Yeah. And I think that's important, especially for a lot of entrepreneurs or people that are growing is that they forget that, hey, you're really not starting from zero. You know, you've actually done a few things before. You know, the reason they hired you is because you had something that they needed in order to grow their business. You know, the reason why you got accepted is because you were unique in your own ways and you were able to convey that. And so when we're starting something new, a lot of times we're like, oh man, I'm starting from scratch, or what have I done? You know, am I deserving? And it's like, no, you are. Like, you are where you're supposed to be. You know, you were supposed to lead those discussions because you made an impact in those other people's lives, because they didn't know that someone else out there was having that same experience as they did. And now they had someone to talk to about that. They had a community of people they could talk to about that. So I think that, you know, as I'm hearing you, I'm like, wow, okay, you're starting to walk in your purpose, right? You're starting to get in your lane even more so. Yes. Now, from that time you started Mocha Girls Pit Stop to the next business, was the next business the Cultivating Her podcast? And if so, how did that happen?
Yes. So that was the next business. And basically what happened was, after I got married, we moved from Maryland to Silicon Valley, and we moved here for my husband's job. And it was at that point in life that I realized in Silicon Valley, you got to know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody in order to get an opportunity. Like, oh my gosh, it was insane. I was rejected left and right. I would send out my resume like, yeah, like I had this transferable experience and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, nah, sis, like, no. So I was feeling so low. I'm like, dang, like, I know that I can do this work. Like, I know that I can make an impact here. And I love computers. Like, I know I can do this. Like, I got this. But they didn't see that. And so I went to networking events. I just really leaned into my support system for support. And what happened was, I had a connection that knew someone at Facebook, and I interviewed for a role at Facebook, and I got my first job out here. I was still working virtually, like doing some speaking engagements and virtual stuff from back east, but I got my first job here at Facebook, and I was so excited. And it was an entry-level role. I remember just being in that environment, though, and seeing that the possibility, like seeing what the possibilities are, right? Like the meals you get at work. I remember walking by to my station and seeing Mark Zuckerberg at his desk in the middle of the, you know, at the middle of headquarters, like in this, he had this like fishbowl desk. And I was like, yo, that's a billionaire right there. And it just made me realize like all the things I read about billionaires and millionaires and people that were wealthy, like this is it, like they are here. And so I worked my way up there, and I ended up searching for a new role because we had moved. And so what I did was I applied for more roles. Again, rejection, rejection, rejection. I got another role at a startup, but that startup closed down when I was 6 months into the role. So I was like, wow. Oh man, like, wow. What am I going to do? I was a community manager there, right? So I had a friend work with me on my resume to tweak it and really position myself as a thought leader based on my transferable skills. So I actually put my blog on my resume. So I was like, I've had this blog for more than 5 years. I've created income. I've grown my social media following. Like, I've done all this from zero. And so I put it on my resume, and I applied for a role at this company that was very new to me, but it was called Asana. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna apply for this role, see what it's about. And I went and interviewed, and it was love at first sight. I was like, this company is dope. Oh my gosh. Like, the productivity space was so important to me because I, you know, love to be productive and manage my time well. So I applied for this role at Asana. It was an entry level role, Abu. And I remember, like, my ego was kind of like, girl, you got a master's degree. What are you doing? Like, you got a master's degree. You can be out here getting the coin. However, I had such a great experience on the interview day. I was like, you know what? A foot in the door is better than being outside the door.
Say that again.
I can work my way up. Come on now. A foot in the door, y'all, is better than being outside the door. And I told myself, you know what? I'm going to go into this entry-level role. I'm going to crush it. I'm going to work like I'm the head of the company. Like, I'm going to go in. And so I worked in that role. I told my manager that I wanted to transfer to a new role within a year. And I worked, worked, worked. Long story short, y'all, within 4 years, I became Asana's very first internal customer success manager, where I was training our teams in Dublin and Iceland and all over the globe, right? And had a chance to be with Asana when they went public as well. So I worked my way up there, but there was still some imposter syndrome with, you know, during my role working at this company with people that went to Ivy League schools, and I'm this public school girl. So I remember being in meetings and, again, being scared to speak up, being afraid to raise my hand, being afraid to, you know, just be who I am. And I realized that, you know, I'm still special. We still have something to offer. We may have taken a different route, but when I looked at it, I was like, wait, they went to Ivy League. I'm a public school girl from Philly, but we're still at the table. So I was like, if you look at it, I actually took the more interesting route. I got a bunch of stories. I had the interesting route and I took the cheaper options. I was like, actually, I'm feeling good about being at the table now, right? Because I have a different perspective. And so when I began to really stop making those excuses and stop seeing myself as though I was less than because of where I came from, that's when all the magic began to happen in that role at Asana.
No, and that's awesome. I didn't even know you worked at Asana, by the way. That's amazing. Yeah. And a lot of y'all don't know what Asana is. Asana is a great, 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 you know, project management tool. And I use Asana to this day. But I love what you learned from it. You realize that, hey, you know, we're all at the same table now. You know, and you may have even realized, too, that, wait a second, these people are no smarter than I am. In fact, you know, I might be the smartest person at this table. And so
you better preach.
I'm glad you realized that, because I think what that did for you mentally is made it was that confirmation. You know, like you already kind of knew, but like being there, it's like, wait a second. You know, the fact that you rose your way and you said you became their first customer success manager.
Internal customer success manager for the company.
Correct. Yep. And that says a lot about you and your work ethic to be able to do that in such a small amount of time. So that's amazing. You know, you went out to an environment that you weren't familiar with. I know Silicon Valley, and it's different. It's very different.
Yeah.
And the fact that you were able to get work at Facebook, the fact that you were able to get to Asana, and really starting to cultivate your journey and take a hold of your journey and say, you know what, I could either make excuses for everything that's happened for me and say, you know, why did this happen to me? Or I could say, you know, I'm glad this happened for me. And then I think that's exactly what you did. So when did, you know, you were at Asana, why'd you decide to leave Asana? And what did you go do next after you left Asana?
Yeah, so I was at Asana and I loved it. Like, I still have great relationships with the company. We've done partnerships together and I love the tool. Like, I use Asana every day. And the thing is, so I was at Asana and what happened was I was still building my business on the side. But to be honest, I was kind of half-stepping, right? Like, I was kind of half-stepping. I was like, people would ask me if I had a business and I would say no. Like, it was just weird. I was in this weird space of like definitely dealing with imposter syndrome. But what happened was I created this podcasting course and I had started to create income on the side as I was working full time. And one day I realized that I had made what I make in a month in my six figure tech job in my business. And I was like,
wait a second.
Hold up. I worked for a couple hours out of the week and I literally made what I make in my day job and I work 40 hours a week. I was like, hold up. So I got to do something. So literally in the midst of the pandemic, I was about, I think, 5 months pregnant at the time. I was like, okay, I'm going to make the transition. So I left my cozy job with, y'all, three meals a day. We got a culinary team. They have nap rooms. Oh my gosh. I mean, you can bring your pets to work, gym membership, lift crap. I mean, all that cozy stuff. I left that to going in on my business full time and help my students and my clients do the same and get great results. I also had two clients, Abu. One made about, I want to say it was around $30,000 plus in 24 hours with a course that I helped her, a workshop that I helped her build as far as the infrastructure. And another one of my private clients, he made like $25,000 in a month, which was, this was huge for them. They had never done this before. And I love to build the infrastructure on the back end. And this is what I do. I love to help people with strategy. And I helped them do that too. And I was like, okay, yeah, I got to make some moves.
So at that point, when you were, you know, you were at your job, you were running the side hustle, what were you selling and what were you like providing as a service at that time? What was the price point, if you remember too?
That's a great question. So let me just be real. I was selling all the things. I was doing so much. I remember my sister who's building her brand. She had signed up for one of my offers and she was so confused. And she messaged me like, hey, sis, like I'm confused. I don't really know. What do I do? And that for me was a very important message on the power of the one thing, because there's so much that I love to do. And I feel like I have so many ideas in my mind. I'm like, I want to do all the things. I want to do them all right now. But I realized that it's so important for us to understand and figure out what are we optimizing for at this point in our lives, right? And so at that time, I had to really get focused on, okay, yes, I can do all these things. I can teach people a lot of things. But what is the one thing that I want to focus on? Because a confused market doesn't buy. And my market was confused because they was like, wait, 1 week you're doing this, 1 week you're doing that, then you're doing this. And I honestly, you know, enrolled in your program too, Abu, and learned a lot from you. And I was like, okay, Terry, I had to have a come to Jesus moment with myself. I said, we're going to focus on the podcasting course because I'm helping my students get so much value and really helping them bring this idea they had to fruition and getting results. And so that was what I achieved the most results with during my time working full time. It was my podcasting course. The price point at the time, I believe, was like, I think it was like $297.
Yeah, still.
And since risen from there. Yeah, since it's increased because now there's more value in the course and, you know, there's a lot of bells and whistles there, but it was $297 at the time. And that's what got me those results.
Wow. Wow. And I'm glad you said you had to focus on that one thing. I know y'all know who I'm talking to. I'm talking to the people listening right now because they're trying to do the most. And when you try to tell them focus on one thing, they try to fight you. Like, we're not saying you can't have it all. We're saying, you know, maybe it's one at a time. You know, maybe it's just that focusing on that one business first. Let it make you money before you start that next business, et cetera. So I'm glad you found now. How did you identify that one thing? Was it you looked at your spreadsheets and said, okay, this is making the most money? Like, how'd you identify out of everything you were offering and you were helping people and they were getting results? How did you then say, you know what? I know I could help people in these areas too, but I need to focus on this thing right here.
Yes. So I am big on investing in myself. Like, even if I didn't have the money in the past, like I figured that shit out. I'm like, I'm going to invest in myself. So investing in coaches and getting support there, but also just taking a look at what are the things that really bring me joy. I had a session with one of my students this week and we figured out her podcast name, her tagline, her description, her cover art brainstorm. And I got so much joy from that session, Abu. And I realized that I get so much joy. I love to teach, right? And so I realized that I get a lot of joy by doing this. The price point is also at a great place where it'll allow me to reach my income goals. So that was one of the things. But also for the folks that want to do all the things, what I do, I kind of sneak all the things into my course. So now, as far as the offering, so pitching is one of the things that I realize I'm very good at. And so now I add that into my course. So it's not like I'm doing all the things, right? I'm just adding this new feature or this new benefit to my course that'll benefit my students, because when you have a podcast, you do want to pitch guests, right? You do want to pitch yourself for interviews. So now I'm able to teach some more of the things that I love, but I put it underneath that umbrella of the podcasting course. And when I tell you that, like, having one link in my bio, it's just so much, there's so much clarity now, instead of having my link tree with go here if you want this, go here if you want that, do this, do that. And then people are like, okay, girl, I don't know what to do now, right? Like, having one link in my bio has given me so much clarity. And I also do brain dumps often where I write down, these are the things I want to move on to in the future. So like, I want to do a documentary at some point. And I don't have the bandwidth to do that now, but I know that in this season of my life, there are a few things that I'm prioritizing. And when I get to the other season, right, and I get my automation where I want it to be and all that, I can then focus on the other things. But we got to do one thing really well, I believe, in order to move on.
No, I love that. I love that. So, you know, these are things I want to do in the future. I love that list, right? That's a list of things you could come back to when you have more time. But in the meantime, you know, you're looking at things that you get joy from. You're looking at things where you can see your impact. You're looking at things where you can see other people talking about your impact. And you're looking at things where you could say, okay, if I price this at a price point that is, you know, more than enough and I'm making money from it, okay, now I'm getting to that point where I'm like, okay, I'm okay with doing this. I'm okay with amplifying this one thing for the moment. And I love the way you did it. You know, I love the way you did it. And so you started helping people. And I think at this point you were already running your podcast when you started helping people start podcasts, correct?
Yes, that's another thing too, Abu. I think we see a lot of that. We're like, if you haven't accomplished something, how are you going to teach somebody else? Like, you haven't done it yet. So what I did, a lot of my businesses and the things that I focus on, they're built, like, I'm my first use case. I'm my first testimonial. Like, I do it for myself. And then I test it out on a few other people. And I'm like, okay, bet. I know how to do this. I have a system. I have a framework that now can help you do the same thing. Now let me actually go forth and share it with people versus like guinea pigging on everybody from day one. So I do think it's important to achieve the result and then teach other people how to do that. So yes.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm going to make sure I put that in twice. Because a lot of people do that. Now, as you are balancing, you know, you talked about, you said you're a mother, you know, you're also a partner. You know, you said you're running, you know, podcasts, which is a lot of work. As I'm experiencing, you are teaching people as well. How are you balancing that all? Because I think I struggle with this, is like, how do I navigate all of this? Are you really good at time management? Like, what's the thing here that's helping you, you know, create balance? And what does that even mean when I say balance?
I love this question. Okay, y'all, come in close for this. Come in close for this one, okay? I don't have a schedule. I don't have a routine. Like, I have tried to create a routine for the longest. And I think sometimes people get overwhelmed because it appears as though other people have a routine and their life is so perfect. My life be a hot mess. Before we even signed on, my daughter she's teething. So she was crying and I had to change. And it was just so much chaos going on, but it was all good. Like, I'm grateful for this stage of the journey. I don't have a routine. And my thing is, Abu, Lisa Nichols, one of my favorite motivational speakers, she always says, balance is a myth. Harmony is a must. Balance is a myth. Harmony is a must. Everything is not created equal. So I don't want my business to be balanced with the time I spend with my daughter, but I do want things to be in harmony. And so for me, the key for me is having what I call, or what one of my mentors calls, an ideal life narrative, where I literally write down, this is what I want my ideal life to look like. Like, this is what I want it to look like. And I talk about each component of my life. So from my career to my relationships, to my finances, to my self-care, I write that out. And then I tend to check in with myself weekly and monthly and like look at my schedule to see, okay, this is not a dress rehearsal. Like, I remember thinking that, okay, I'm going to work really hard and drive myself insane and work really hard. And then I'll rest and have the harmony later. No, this is not a dress rehearsal. Like, this is the real thing. So what I do is I'm selfish. I prioritize my self-care. I fill my cup intentionally. So whether it's pedicures and manis, whether it's massages, like whatever it is, I do that because I know that if I'm not okay, if my cup isn't full, my household is not going to run as smoothly. I'm not going to be able to show up for the podcast the way that I want to. And so I am a recovering perfectionist and a recovering people pleaser and a recovering procrastinator. And so for me, understanding what I'm optimizing for at which season in my life is so crucial to me being successful. And so, yeah, harmony is a must. There are some days where things just don't. Some days, recently, I had to, like, just give myself the day off because I was like, okay, I'm feeling stressed out. Things are not going the way that I wanted to. I'm feeling overwhelmed. And I have to be real with myself about that. And I just let myself have a break because I don't sometimes want to take breaks, you know? Like, so understanding what your ideal life narrative is, what it looks like, and then implementing that now before you reach your goals, because this is really a lifestyle that we're trying to build.
Yeah, and that's something I struggle with. And so yeah. Balance is a myth. Harmony is a must. I think for me, and maybe some people, we like measuring stuff. Okay, how much time did I spend here? How much time did I spend there? Okay, was this equal amount of sleep and work and play? And so how do you, I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around it. How do you measure harmony? Or is the goal not to measure harmony?
Oh, okay. So, okay, let me see. I hope I answered this correctly, but let me know. So the way that I do it is looking at literally the other day, I tend to get overwhelmed easily. So I literally am looking at my ideal life narrative and what I'm optimizing for in this quarter often. Like, I just looked at it the other day because I was like, wait, what am I doing with my life? And I was like, hold up, we have something in place for this. So I go look at that. And then I look at my week and I'm like, okay, how am I spending my time? I love to use the calendar. So I actually plug everything in. So even like call my siblings, FaceTime, I put everything on the calendar, y'all. Because if it isn't on the calendar for me, it doesn't exist. And so for me, it's mapping out, putting those things on the calendar, and then sitting back to look at, okay, is this supporting the ideal life narrative and how I said I wanted to feel in this category of my life, in my career, or as far as my relationships. So I would say at this time, y'all, I don't sleep a lot. For this past 7 months, I've been waking up every 2 to 3 hours to feed my daughter because I'm still a nursing mama. And so I never knew that I could deal without this much sleep, but I'm making it work. And I think it's all about how we feel as we do what we're doing. So just looking at my calendar to see, okay, am I doing what I said I wanted to do, right? And does it feel good when I do these things? And I think for me, that is the best way for me to find harmony, is having everything just flow together. So some moms have like mommy guilt. We have sitters that come and help because I can't do my work if my baby's crying. And, you know, so using what I can by way of resource and support to allow me to achieve the goals that I want to achieve and show up in the way that I want to show up.
No, I love that. You know, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And how do I feel doing that? And I think I don't ask myself those questions. I just look at how much time did I spend in this area? So yeah. It's a different way of thinking. And I kind of like that a little bit more than the, you know, trying to find balance. Because everyone always says balance, like equal, because that's the first thing that comes to mind. So I love how you broke that down, and that gives me and the audience a new perspective. Now, as you're building this podcast, you're podcasting, you are living, you know, harmony is a must. How are you, because you've had over 2 million downloads, right? You've been able to go to 0 to 2 million. And so I want to talk about two things here, because you also have a co-host or a co-founder. Yes. Is that a co-founder or co-host?
Mm-hmm. So we've made our podcast is now like an LLC. So she's my co-host and co-founder. Yes.
Okay. So two things there, right? How are you, because I'm in the podcasting space, right? Creating all this good content. Like, how do you go from 0 to 2 million? You know, that's my first question. And I'll follow up with my second question.
Yes. Thank you for breaking it up too, Abu, because I'm like, I'm going to forget the second part. Okay. So what we do, so I talk about this in my podcasting masterclass, this framework that I have, but one of the things that's so important to growing your podcast is creating irresistible content, right? And for us, it's also consistency. So literally, Abu, for the past 2.5 years, y'all, I'm going to say this with a lot of pride and joy, because I've never been this consistent with anything in my life. We have released an episode every single Friday for the past 2.5 years, no days off. Now, I say that in the midst of life. So in the midst of a miscarriage that I had, in the midst of me being pregnant, in the midst of my grandmother, who was like my BFF, passing away, in the midst of me traveling for speaking engagements and my co-host traveling for speaking engagements, like, we have been so consistent with this, and our listeners know they can expect us every single Friday with a new episode, right? That's the first part, the consistency. As far as creating irresistible content, so in my course, I talk about something called your illa forilla, which is basically something that we know as like your target market. It's your ideal loyal listener avatar, for real. Like, it's your illa forilla, right? Your ideal loyal listener avatar. And this is this is the person that you want to connect with. This is the person that resonates with your content. And the cool thing for my co-host and I is that we are our illa forilla. So a lot of times we'll sit and we're like, okay, we mapped out this episode, but where's our energy at? We really go in with our energy on like, what do we want to talk about based on knowing that we are the type of woman that we are attracting to the podcast? And so with that in mind, we go create that content. So our listeners, we know that we both have interesting relationships with our moms. So guess what? We did a lot of content around narcissistic parents, because we know a lot of other people have, you know, interesting relationships with parents. We did an episode about mommy issues, an episode about daddy issues, and those episodes have more than 20,000 downloads, and they're growing. And it's because our listeners, this is the content that they want to see, right? We talk about a lot of taboo topics that, again, people are talking about with their friends, they're thinking about within themselves, but they may not see content where they're breaking down the real, like, this is what's really going on in my life. So I think for us, it's really creating that irresistible content and not being afraid to touch on those taboo topics that some people are like, I'm going to shy away from that, right? And just knowing our audience so well and creating that conversational tone, also leaning into transparency, because people want to have those real authentic conversations. So I believe that that has definitely been instrumental in our growth. Irresistible content, leaning into what our illa forilla wants and needs.
No, and that's amazing. You said illa, is it I-L-A?
Illa, I-L-L-A, your ideal loyal listener avatar.
Ideal loyal listener avatar. I love that. I was like, wait a second, what?
It's such a fun word.
I love that. Right.
Have fun.
And then my follow-up question for that is, I mean, you've built, you know, businesses yourself. Now you're building a business with a co-founder. You know, how is that? Because you all have been putting out, you've been working together for the last few years. So what's that relationship like, building a business with a co-founder?
Yes. So coming from the world of like building stuff solo, there are many pros and cons, right? But I would say that the pros definitely outweigh the cons in our situation. Another thing I want to say, Abu, we actually met randomly at a conference. Like, we met at a conference. We ended up, you know, connecting, and we went to dinner, and we were both like, oh, we want to do something for Black women. And then we just literally decided to create a podcast, had no idea how to do it, what to do, but we figured it out. And so I would say that whenever you're thinking about finding a co-founder or a co-host or whatever, you want to interview the person like you're interviewing someone you're going to date. This is a relationship. We literally talk about how we co-parent this podcast. So would you want to learn about their strengths, their areas for improvement? How are you all going to complement one another? She is a psychologist, and so she comes with the mental health perspective. I'm the motivational speaker. I really lean into transparency, and so I'm also the techie. So we complement each other very well. And so I think just not like, you know, not just looking at your friend and saying, oh, we're BFFs, let's just go into business together. Well, does it make sense for us to be in relationship in this way? So I think that's really key. But we have a great working relationship. We use Asana for everything. So it's so great because when she's on the go, when I'm on the go, we can brainstorm, we put our ideas in Asana. We have it nicely organized where all of our, you know, episodes are and different projects to help us organize our ideas, the people we want to pitch and all those things. So Asana definitely helps us keep things organized and keep things flowing. And I just think we have a great working relationship because we had those conversations about us like co-owning and co-parenting this podcast in the beginning. And we realized that it made sense and we complement each other so well. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's really important to highlight. A lot of the business owners I've interviewed have been solo, you know, founders. And so it's really important to highlight that it is a co-parenting. You know, you do want to interview these individuals that you find. And it's great when the alignment is the same. You both want to make the same impact. Sometimes people are co-founding people that the alignment may not be there, but they're just trying to get the skill set. And so it's really important that the alignment and the skill set are there. And, you know, no one is going to, when it's just your vision, it's hard to get someone that's a co-founder to buy into that. But when it's both y'all visions, it's a lot easier to work towards it at a very high level and be willing to sacrifice in order to make sure that thing is still operating and running. So thank you for giving me insight into your relationship. And she's amazing, you know, because y'all interviewed me for the podcast. And you both are like yin and yang. Y'all feed off of one another. And that's one thing that I noticed about, you know, your co-parenting of this, of the podcast that y'all are running. And so thank you for sharing that. The other thing I want to talk about is pitching. And so we talked about this early on and you said, you know what, we're helping anyone that is trying to figure out how to pitch because we've identified this is where people struggle in pitching to get collaborations, pitching to get sponsorships. So do you have any tips for those listening in on, you know, how to pitch and maybe they get that high profile guest or they get that, you know, partnership that they're looking for? Do you have any tips around that for the audience?
Yes, I think the first thing, Abu, is we have to be honest with ourselves about what we were bringing to the table, right? Because whenever you pitch someone, you like they're going to be thinking, what's in it for me, right? Everyone's tuned into, what do they say, WIIFM, what's in it for me? And so you really want to think about, what am I bringing to the table? What value do I have to offer this person, right? Is it my audience? Is it this niche that I'm in? And so that's the first part is like, what do I bring to the table? The second part is, am I consistent, right? Because let's be real, in the beginning of my journey, I was not very consistent. And so I remember when I was younger, I used to think Auntie Oprah was going to come and save me and like, you know, put me on and life will be amazing after that. And I remember really questioning like, why aren't I getting these features? Why isn't this happening? But I'm so happy I didn't because child, YouTube was around back then. I'm so happy they don't have videos of me on YouTube where I did not put in the work, right? And so I think a lot of times we have to show up for ourselves in private so that we can succeed in public. So understanding what our value is, and then also understanding, you know, does it make sense for us to do this, right? Like if Beyonce were to want to be on my podcast back when I was starting out and I wasn't consistent or be on the blog, and I wasn't consistent, I didn't really know what I was doing, it probably wouldn't have been a good match, right? So once we get all that out of the way, you want to do your research. And I know people that's like super cliche, like do your research, but like go look and see who runs this platform. We get so many pitches nowadays, Abu, and people will call my co-host who's Dr. Dom or Dominique Broussard. They call on her, hey, Dominic, and hey, like spelling names wrong. I mean, you gotta be detailed, right? Also, we have people that come pitch, and I'm not making fun, y'all, but it's just like, let's be real. I got people coming to pitch and they didn't even see that, oh, you just talked about narcissism last week on your podcast, but they're pitching us to talk about narcissism. Look and see where is there a void in that person's, like in the market, right? Or based on what they're trying to speak about and pitch them something unique and interesting, right? Like go do your research. One person that we're trying to pitch, okay, we've been trying to pitch Megan Thee Stallion for the longest because I'm a huge fan. We're both huge fans, right? And we pitched her people, Abu, and they actually got back to us. The scheduling wasn't on point at the time. So I'm like persistent. So we're going to keep on trying. But the fact that two of our representatives got back to us, I think that says a lot. And what we did was we did our research. We looked into what was going on in her life. What is she promoting at the time? Right now, Meg is promoting her Popeyes, her new Popeyes chicken sandwich or whatever. So when we go to pitch again, I'm going to add that in there. We want to talk about the things that she's working on, right? What's the benefit going to be to her, right? So that's another one. I would say also you want to make sure that you are prepared for the type of person that you're pitching, right? I don't know about you, but I want to make sure that I'm in a decent space and I feel confident and comfortable interview-wise if I have a high-profile guest come on. If Yvonne Orji would have been on our podcast on day one, it wouldn't have been a very good experience because our technology was still wonky. If you listen to our first episode, you can only hear my audio in one ear. Okay? Like, we value progress over perfection, y'all, but you can only hear my audio in one ear. So Yvonne would have been like, sis, what's good? Like, what's happening, right? So now that we are in a space where we're better equipped, now we can support that. I would also recommend watching Hot Ones with Sean Evans. He's a YouTuber and he has a show called Hot Ones where he interviews celebrities while they're eating progressively spicier wings. And he's won an Emmy for how amazing he interviews. He does his research. And if you want to see an example of what good interviewing is, go to Sean Evans and take a look because his interviews are amazing. So I would say those are some of the main tips there, Abu, for pitching. And of course, like coming up with a subject line that is appealing and gets their attention. But I think there's a quote, I might butcher it, but it goes something like, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I think that goes, that's true for pitching as well. Like you can see when someone's just pitching you and they copy and pasted your name and your name is in a different font than the rest of the email because they keep putting everyone else's name and it's generic. Like you can see that, you know, come on now. Come on, y'all.
Right, right. Wait, so the quote was people don't know. Wait, people don't say that one more time.
I think y'all, I think it might be a Maya Angelou quote, but I don't want to betray it. It's people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Bars right there. I love that. that's a fact. That's a fact. Now, Terry, you dropped so many tips, strategies, gems, and I'm appreciative that you were willing to open up about, you know, your childhood because, you know, you faced a lot of adversity to where you are right now. And I got to know you because you took the Power Relaunch Marketing Accelerator, my program, and then you allowed me on your platform to, you know, to be interviewed. So you're someone that I watch all the time and I'm super proud of you for your journey, you know, our Philly connection and just how you are an example of someone who wasn't brought up in environment where they had everything. You made the most out of what you had. You were resourceful with limited resources and you're now giving back in so many different ways from the information that you're putting out there, the guests that you're interviewing, the coaching that you're providing. So I want to thank you so, so much for making the time today as you're being a super mom in the background. Ooh. For jumping on this episode and for even encouraging me to, you know, win a podcast, right? So I thank you. I thank you so much, Terry. Now, where can people find you? What are you currently working on that they should tune into as well?
Yes. So you can find me on Instagram or social media at Terry Lomax. That's TerriLomax. And you can also visit podcastwithterry.com. If you're like, you know, let me see what this podcast the world is about. I have a very interactive, high energy, very valuable free masterclass where you can come and see if you like my teaching style, see if you, you know, if you vibe with me. So that's podcastwithterry.com. And y'all, you know, I told you I'm working on the one thing, Abu, but I do also want to give folks an opportunity to get their pitching skills up in this new live 3-part pitching series that I have. And you can go to getthatpitch.com. And at the bottom where it asks for the discount code, you can just type in Abu and you'll get a nice little discount there since you are a supporter of Abu's. And that's practically it. I do have a closing quote that I'd love to share, Abu, if that's okay.
Yep, yep.
Okay, so there's a quote. I forget the person, y'all. You have to Google the person because I don't want to butcher their name. But the quote says, the creator did not give you a longing to do that which you have no ability to do. And I'm a firm believer that if we have an idea or if there's something that keeps coming up for us, you know, you have those ideas when you go to sleep at night, you keep thinking about them or you wake up in the morning, it's there for a reason. So go do that thing. Take action. Life is precious. And go impact the world.
No, I love that. I love that. Thank you so much, Terry. And thank you all for listening to this week's podcast. And I will see you all during the next episode. All right.
Thank you for joining us at the Powered AF podcast. Make sure to visit our website and make sure to follow our podcast anywhere you listen to the podcast to make sure you never miss a show. And please, 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 if you enjoyed this episode and this show, please make sure to leave us a review. It really, really does help. And last thing, if you're interested in this freebie that I just released, I want you to check this out. Recently, I put together a free online training on how to 10x your sales online. This is for business owners who are struggling with making consistent sales online. Whether you run a product or service-based business, this is the perfect training for you. The free training is still up and you can access it by going to poweryourlaunch.com/pod. Again, poweryourlaunch.com/pod. That's P-O-D. All right. Thanks again for listening in. I'll see you during our next show.